Andy and Anna here from your new favourite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Brought to you by Zadok Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Belvieu, Houston. The summer circuit rolls on from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, live from City Center Plaza. Here's the Killer Bees, Joe Blank and Jeremy Brenham.
Oh, an hour left to come see us out at City Center Plaza. Will House will be in here until 7. AC's been here all day, braving the elements. Although, you know what's interesting about AC, aside from his beauty? He's engineering today. You know, good engineers, good producers, they always put the talent first. They always put the talent first. We have one good chair here. Guess who's in the one good chair?
It's his.
Who brought the one good chair, Jeremy?
But it's his.
It doesn't matter.
I went to my car and grabbed this lawn chair.
On-site engineers are selfless. Producers are selfless. It's why they're a very thankless job. It's why we appreciate them. It's why we love them. But the talent always gets the best chair.
I have nothing bad to say about AC. I think he made a cagey business decision. He comes with resources in his vehicle that could be used at any time. I'm not mad at him. I think we all went into this with an open mind but not knowing what to expect, and he was able to adapt on the fly.
Thank you, Joel.
You're welcome.
The fact that either of you taking it seriously cracks me up.
Well, isn't it we're supposed to do as part of a bit?
I'm not sure you were bidding.
I was. I don't care. I'm sitting on a stool. I don't care.
I don't know why the stool would play part into the bit.
That's why he went to get the chair, because he didn't want to sit on the stool that we're sitting on.
So it is serious.
For him.
So is it a bit? We appreciate Chewy coming out, though, even though he didn't bring us anything.
He's our security guard. No one can get by Chewy.
He is. He's our muscle. Chewy is our muscle.
Who did we have to –
Avery.
Birthday?
Avery swung on by. She said hello. It's her birthday. Happy birthday, Avery. David brought us water. Thanks to David for doing that. Tecovas, which is right across the way. We're in the middle of the courtyard inside of City Center. It's a great spot. It's a great day to be outside. And we're right across from Tecova, and they brought us out a couple of sparkling waters, brought us out some waters, regular waters. AC had, what was that, the death water that you argued once that was trash, and now you're drinking it?
Liquid Death.
Liquid Death.
Cody is convinced that Liquid Death is the greatest water on planet Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite good.
Especially on a day like today.
Did he ever have an endorsement with Liquid Death?
He did not, but he really wanted one.
And obviously the real big boy, Lance, got what he deserved. He got the deal.
Yeah. AC, do you identify as a big boy or a measly midday guy?
I identify as a relatively sized boy.
Why can't you just be I think the right answer there is I'm just a man of the people.
I wanted you to say I'm a big boy. I really wanted you to say that.
I thought about it, and then I was like, you know what? I'm not going to give Jeremy that pleasure.
Well played. What is it going to take for the Killer Bees to apologize to one of the original Killer Bees, Jeff Bagwell? 8693, why don't we give Reggie any credit or blame? Is it because Bagwell is the one behind the microphone? I'm genuinely curious. Y'all know more about their roles than I do. That's probably true. It probably is because Bagwell is more of a focal point. He is behind the microphone. He's kind of been a spokesman for this team, especially when there wasn't a general manager. So that is why. Reggie Jackson's the straw that stirs the drink. Reggie Jackson was the straw that stirred the drink on the last legitimate Yankee championship in the late 70s.
Okay, great. I mean, look, Jim Crane did what the Yankees weren't willing to do. He gave Reggie a job in the front office and pays him, and Reggie's very appreciative of that. And Reggie knows baseball history and been a part of baseball history, and Reggie knows baseball to a certain degree. But I think that the answer that I was leaning on that you brought up is every press conference while there was a gap and when these moves were being made, it was Bagwell, not just on the television broadcast later trying to defend the moves, it was Bagwell talking about the moves. It was Bagwell that we continually know and reference the quote of, yeah, Brantley's going to be ready by the start of the season. And he keeps saying that Abreu's going to turn it around. Now, lately, it's looked like he's saving face on that, but it's a threefold proposition. They went out and they overpaid at the time, and I know that now it looks a little better money-wise, Rafael Montero, and I went over and again, this was his best season ever as a baseball pitcher.
It doesn't look better now.
I think when you say that, you know, from the standpoint of what you gave up dollar figure wise,
yeah,
it wasn't that big of a stretch. And it was maybe a couple million dollars more than he should have gotten based on what the market was. But you and I were saying at the end of the year, hey, look, Montero's been great this year. Tip your cap. Someone's going to make him their closer and give him way too much money.
Right.
Neither one of us thought that it was going to be the Astros that were going to give him too much money.
I've defended Montero. I'll be the first one to admit it does seem long. I don't mind the AAV as much. Like, it's their money. The 3 years is a bit curious, especially like I whenever I defend Montero, I say, look at the AAV from Montero, other relievers. It's similar AAV. The difference is Montero has 3 years. Most of these guys have one. So it's the years to me is where you can really criticize the Montero deal. The AAV is high, but like, who cares? The length is something that is worth criticism. And it's the same thing with Abreu. Like, why are we apologizing to Bagwell? Like, Abreu's had a good 2 weeks.
This is a three.
Look at Abreu's numbers to date. It's still very bad.
Yeah.
Jose Abreu's numbers for the 2023 season is still poor, especially relative to the amount of money you're paying him. It is also a 3-year deal. we're not apologizing to Bagwell.
Bagwell's argument in favor of is look at June. Our argument is look at the dollar figure and look at the whole season and the body of work and tell me that's what you paid for. And then the last fold of the trifold that you have to be, you know, relying on is the guy you said you told everybody was going to be ready by opening day. We still haven't seen him. We don't know when we're going to see him. And Michael Brantley, people are losing their mind when he's out there throwing with the good arm instead of worrying about the only real main reason he was brought back, which is, aside from giving speeches in the locker room during the playoffs, that is hitting the baseball and hitting the baseball at a high average that fits into this offensive lineup. That's where it starts and ends with Michael Brantley. Until you see him back on the field, and when he's on the field, not looking like a shell of himself, looking like the Brantley that doesn't have to hit a ton of bombs, but hits 300 and gets on base and sets the table for the rest of the lineup and makes it more difficult to face. That's when you're going to start forgiving Jeff Bagwell.
The Abreu contract and the Montero contract, we're never going to have a full assessment of it until after the third year. We are going to give you how we feel about it at this moment. Jose Abreu has had a great June, leads all of baseball in RBIs so far in the month of June. Jose Abreu, to this point in the season, has not been a good baseball player. When you look at all of the numbers, cumulative numbers, he's not living up to the contract. And this is the first few months of a 3-year deal. Rafael Montero, in the first few months of a 3-year deal, has been bad. He's been a bad reliever. His ERA is north of 6. He has not been good, and we'll grade it out in 3 years. Michael Brantley, who he gave a full year to, hasn't swung a baseball bat in a Major League Baseball game. So, like, if we're trying to even defend Jeff Bagwell here, you can't. You still can't defend Bagwell, even though Abreu has had a good couple of weeks in June, because Abreu's still been bad, Montero's still been bad, and Brantley has not played. Like, why are we apologizing to the original Killer Bee? Explain that to me.
If Abreu's June is all you can hang your hat on to this point, and by the way, this point is June in a major league season with no signs of having anything to hang your hat on from Brantley, and hoping that every time Dusty keeps throwing Montero out there that it starts looking better and he starts looking like the Montero of last season, that's a big reach. Abreu's June is all you're basing this on, that everybody should start apologizing to Baggy? Come on, man. It's going to take a whole lot more than that. And at least two of these guys with at least signs of life from a third is the only thing that's going to get you to start looking at the fact that maybe it's going to work out for them, but you're never going to say, oh, I apologize to Bagwell for these moves.
Yeah, like even with Abreu being hot, I would still say it's been a bad offseason for the three Bagwell moves. And I think it is fair, like the texter said, that, you know, it's probably not all Jeff Bagwell. They had their little, you know, Astro Parliament while they didn't have a general manager with Enos, with Reggie. I'm not even sure they included Dusty.
Furcus.
With Bagwell, you know, Bill Furcus. sounds like the sports science guy. What was it, the other guy, Ball or whatever? So, like, they had a bunch of people. Bagwell was probably the spokesman more than anybody else. Obviously, he was. And Bagwell probably gets too much grief for these deals that Parliament made. But Bagwell's the point man. Like, we're going to point to the point man whenever we talk about the offseason. 409, Josh, I've said it before, but I really think Bagwell wanted to contribute to a championship team so bad that he jumped in front of the mics to be seen as a contributor. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think Bagwell is like a look at me guy at all, to be quite frank. I really don't. He's never been that way before.
I see the point in the fact that with the we's and the us's and how he still so wants to be completely attached to this team.
But I think he was asked.
Right.
I think Crane asked him.
Well, that's where I was going with this. But I'm saying that he has such a love and a desire for this team to succeed and be a part of it, that when the opportunity presented itself, I think Crane went to him. I think Crane says, I want to kind of tap into your baseball knowledge. He knows that he stays on top of this team and watches the majority of the games. He didn't want to do the daily thing like he did when he was the hitting coach for a short period of time. So it was best case scenario for both sides. Bagwell could step in and be the assistant that Crane needs with some guidance when he didn't have it, when he was trying to find a real general manager. And from his perspective, it would also attach him more to the team. He just didn't know that there was a chance the bottom could fall out on every single opportunity that he had to be a part of a move. And that's what you got to deal with, because that's the life and times of anybody that's making personnel decisions in professional sports.
Yeah, and some of it's hindsight. Like, no one was mad at the Abreu deal. There was some critical about Montero. I think most people were okay with the Brantley deal. So a lot of it is hindsight. I could see that.
Did you think about the alternatives, too? Like, if it wasn't Brantley and you were just going to
say... Well, yeah, I'd have that because I wanted Yoshida so bad.
Well, but I don't know that Yoshida was ever in that conversation. But I'm thinking about... what's the name of the? He signed with the White Sox, Benintendi. I'm like, Benintendi, he hasn't really blown anybody away either, and they spent a boat ton of money on him. So
what is he doing this year?
There's a chance for Brantley to save face and for Bagwell to save face on that particular move, but time's running out, man. It's still ticking. Like, by the All-Star break, we got to know that there's a chance coming out of the break in the next week or so that he's going to be a part of this ball club, or in August when he can still have time to kind of get his timing back and do the things that he was supposedly already supposed to be doing in Sugarland, so that he can be a part of this team when you need him most. There's a chance for him to still save face, but what the hell? Why is he telling? Did he tell us opening day? And we're looking at past All-Star break.
Benintendi's been bad this year.
Yeah.
Sub-700 OPS. Chaz has been better than Benintendi.
Yeah, that's why I said in that particular case, which was a name that was thrown out there, I'm fine with the fact that they felt better about Brantley, because I guess evidently they felt like he was going to be ready opening day. But even still, I'm glad they stayed away from Benintendi. But some of the other names, I didn't look at, do the deep dives on all of them, but I'm like, who would you have been better off with?
Largo says, when Bagwell apologizes to Dr. Brown, I'll apologize. We can't say that stuff on
dirty.
The air. Largo, 713-780-3776 and twitch.tv/ESPN 97.5. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, broadcasting live from City Center Plaza. ESPN 97.5 will be here until 7, so stop by on your way home from work. Stop by, enjoy all the shops. Got a Bella Green right there to my left, the Daily Gather, which is awesome. A Yard House behind us, a Kendra Scott. You know, Chewy, woman in your life, Kendra Scott, she'd like it. 713-780-ESPN. Even though Justin Verlander was good yesterday versus the Yankees, has the decision to let him go the one thing that Bagwell and Crane did 100% right? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
The summer circuit rolls on from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, live from City Center Plaza. Here's the Killer Bees, Joe Blank and Jeremy Brenham.
AC was telling us a lot of deep thoughts during the break.
Yeah,
I think the heat might be getting to him. He did tell us the heat index was 108 today.
Q did.
He just said it 2 seconds ago.
Well, I heard that Q did, because Q was laboring out here. He spent so much time out here that he really felt the heat.
He was here for the two minutes that he booked.
He
sweated,
sold
this.
Outfit.
He was here for 2 minutes. He was out. So it's, you said, a feel like temperature of 108. Which is a great day to be outside. Come on, hang out with us at City Center Plaza. If you don't want to be outside, they have tons of shops. Like, you just go shop to shop to shop. You're really only going to be outside for like 2% of the time you're here. There's ice cream to my right, Jenny's Ice Cream, Jenny with one N. That's a little weird. And then you have Yard House behind us. You got Bella Green over there. I mean, it's a great spot to hang out. If you can't make it today, weekend spot. It's jam-packed here, by the way, too. was it difficult for you to find a parking spot? So, you like Yogi Berra, when he once said that, you know, no one goes there anymore because it's too crowded. This place is crowded. This place is happening. It's popping. This is the spot to be at City Center Plaza. And the Wheelhouse will be here at 7 when the sun goes down. So the Softies, you know, they don't have to deal with the 108 heat index. I'm sure Paul didn't mention anything about anybody being soft today as he was sitting in the climate control studios of Gal Media with the AC. Joe George has no leg to stand on calling anybody soft today as he's sitting in the production room of the air-conditioned Gal Media building.
I haven't called anyone soft.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm sure you haven't, and you couldn't today. You couldn't today. The Killer Bees are tough. There's nothing soft about the Killer Bees, like you can say about certain Astros. Not naming names. 713-780 ESPN, HRP listener line. 713-780-3776. Justin Verlander pitched yesterday, was fine. Is this the one decision the Astros got 100% right? Jim Crane, Jeff Bagwell, not signing Justin Verlander to a $43 million AAV for 2 years. Is this the one decision they got right? 100% right.
100%? I don't know that there's any 100%.
Okay. Way to really take a stance.
Okay, then go ahead. Do you think he got it right?
I would have rather signed Verlander than Rafael Montero. Like, if I agree with allowing Verlander to go. I didn't want Justin Verlander on September 1st. I was making a very strong stance before we even got to Justin Verlander entering free agency. So I was fine with Justin Verlander, like the Astros letting Justin Verlander go. But I don't think because the Astros didn't give out bad contracts, you know, 18.5 to Abreu, 12.5 to Montero, 15 whatever it is for Michael Brantley who hasn't played in a Major League Baseball game. Like, whenever you look at all four of those decisions, would I have rather taken Verlander or the other three? Like, I probably would have went Verlander even though he's not been pitching all that great.
This is as close to 100% as you can get, but this is the discussion that we had when you actually brought this up. You were the first guy, to your credit, that brought it up and brought it to the attention that this is a move that – they might want to consider doing. And I remember you saying, do you want Verlander or do you want three other players? Well, there it is. Those are three other players you got for the price of Verlander, essentially. And I think you're still better off. And I think that when you look at the totality of the deal and what we saw in the playoffs, and even then, as much as I said when we were having the conversation before we even got to the playoffs a year ago, hey, look, if they win a second one, they can move on from Justin Verlander and be just fine. If they don't, maybe there's more pressure on Crane and everybody else to keep the band together for another year. They won it. They moved on from him. You spent the money that you would have spent on Verlander on three other players that hasn't worked out to this point. There's still a chance for it to work out. But when you look at the Mets and how their shortcomings are being exposed on a daily basis, and the fact that you're spending $90 million a year on two guys that pitch every fifth day that aren't pitching anywhere near what you expected when you spent that on them, and you still have a roster of Lindor and the Panda Bear, the big polar bear, and all Alonso and all the other guys that they have, and you're going, I think we dodged a huge bullet there. I mean, if nothing else, it's addition by subtraction that you don't have to worry about being on the hook for 2 years of that Justin Verlander. You got the right Justin Verlander when you had him.
It's interesting because I think each deal is like case by case, but then you have to look at big picture whenever you look at the allocation of resources, right? Like if you're going to spend $40 million in free agency, is it better for a 40-year-old starting pitcher nearly in Justin Verlander, or is it better to spread that $40 million around a bullpen arm, a first baseman, a left field DH? I still believe that it's the second option. It's the three. It's a bullpen arm, it's a first baseman, it's a left field DH. The problem was they made the right decision on Verlander, and then they potentially made the wrong decision on Montero, Brantley, and then if Abreu can, you know,
remember now,
sustain the success, then maybe we can flip Jose Abreu.
And they could have done more. They had money to do more.
Yeah, there's like $20 million under the CBT.
That they could have still continued to do. But I think that their line of thinking was, hey, look, we've got enough. We know that you couldn't have predicted that Garcia was going to be done for the season. Yeah. You couldn't have predicted that Lance was never going to, although we could have, that Lance was not going to be available. But, or Urquidy was going to go down. But even still, their starting pitching has been really good. And when we're starting to figure out who the 4 and 5 is, you know that 1, 2, and 3 have been good enough. And actually, to some degree, Fromber taking it to a level and continuing. Javier stepping up. Hunter Brown stepping way up. So you still have the ability to do more, and yet you're in a better spot than Verlander and or the team that he ended up going to. And when you look at the Verlander that they're getting, even though he pitched really well last night to Dual Cole, overall the body of work says that's more the guy that you saw in the playoffs than you saw that when he was dominant with the Astros.
Not that like ERA or like any of the numbers are going to predict what a pitcher is going to do versus Justin Verlander. Verlander's ERA is worse than Brandon Belak. It's worse than J.P. Francis. Like, I'm not saying that either of those guys are better, but they're producing better. Like, they're producing better on a league minimum deal as opposed to Verlander, who's making $43 million a year. I thought it was lousy by the Mets to spend that much money on two starting pitchers that are nearly 40 years old, and it hasn't panned out. Verlander is not, and there's still time, but Verlander has not been good, and Scherzer looks like a shell of himself. It's just, to me, it's never wise to spend huge money on players that are near 40 years old.
No, you're right on that. And look, I feel like the brain of Brantley, I mean, the brain of Branham when I say this, but you can say in his defense, look, we knew that JV always had an outing or two, like a year ago in Seattle when everything he was going great, and then all the wheels fell off, and he gave up 8 runs and a whole bunch of home runs, and you're like, it's one of those Verlander starts. He pitched in Colorado. He got lit up, gave up a bunch of bombs, a bunch of runs. He's had a couple where he's just given up a ton, but overall, he's not even close to what he was. Even in the playoffs as Verlander, for the most part, I look at it and say, you got the best of Justin Verlander. You made the right move. At the time, we kind of set the parameters of – you were saying that it's legitimately something they should think about. I was saying, look, if they win it all, then it's definitely something you could consider. And I was thinking more about the lines of having to get that validated second championship in my mind. But when you look at it now, you're like, thank goodness in revisionist history, when I look at it now in retrospect, they made the right move. And both sides, hey, it worked out for him. No matter what happens when he pitches, he got paid. And he got his last big payday that he really wanted to get.
Uh-huh.
The Astros got what they needed to get out of him. There was no bad blood, and they've gotten what they needed to do to stay competitive as a baseball team.
At that contract, at the price, like, he almost has to win another Cy Young. Like, if you're paying him $43 million, and it's not just a one-year deal. It's a two-year deal. If you're giving him 2 years at 43 per, like, he's got to finish top three in the Cy Young to justify that contract.
And I looked it up, and Scherzer, I think, still has 2 left.
Does he?
Yeah.
Because remember, they're the same salary.
Yeah, because that was the big competitive thing, remember, I brought up at the time. I was like, he wants Scherzer money.
Yep.
Well, now you've got both guys underperforming and getting overpaid, and you've got them not just for this season. You got them for at least one, if not two more, in the case of Scherzer, where you're like, how's that working out for you? And Cohen, as an owner, has to say, yeah, no, I'm not ready to pull the plug. I'm not there. You know, we're going to be all right, and there's still things we can do, and I'm not mad. You know with how much you're kicking out on every 2 weeks and right when they're signing those checks that you can't be pleased kicking out that much money for that return on investment.
Yeah.
I got it in today.
He makes a lot of money, though. Like, he's almost like the Saudi PIF. Like, it's throwing tons of money at it. The Verlander deal, too, it's got a vesting option. Like, if he pitches enough innings next year, doesn't matter how productive, if he pitches enough innings next year, it's $35 more million when he's 42 years old.
I was asking guys at the gym when I brought this up the other day, and I was like, Verlander seems to me that there was two with an option. And they kept saying, no, I've looked it up, I know it, it's only two. I'm like, they're lucky it's only two, but I felt like there was an option, but that's exactly what I was referring to. Because you ain't yet. Now you can't just wipe your hands of it and be done with him in another season.
I don't know if it's like a vested option that turns into a player option like the Astros had it, but Spotrac says vested option, 2025, he gets $35 million in 2025 at the age of 42 if he pitches 140 innings next year. Which 140 innings is not a lot for a guy that can, if he's making all of his starts, and if he has a 5 ERA and throws 140 innings, now all of a sudden he's locked into $35 million.
Crazy.
When he's 42. It's a bad deal. Yeah, it is 100% right. It is the one move that Baggy and Crane were 100% right on, and you know, revisionist history, here we are, June 15th, and Justin Verlander is an ERA north of 4.
Caught me a little flat-footed at the time, but yeah.
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Wheel of Bits, every day at 2:30, Joe George spins the wheel. Whatever it lands on is what we're talking about today. We never have any idea, but hang tight. Skiller B's on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. One thing that never catches you off guard if you're a business owner, this is if you use HR&P, is how helpful they are with human resources and payroll. If you don't have HR&P, well, then it will catch you off guard. You're not going to know what you're doing. You're not going to have a whole lot of help. Do this for your business. Do this for your employees. Get HR&P. It's Cougar owned by Mike Holley, members of the Cougar 100 for the 8th year in a row. You've seen all the signage at U of H games. You've seen their beautiful building off the Beltway. But business owners, let HRP help you. They can help you with HR compliance. clients. They can help you in benefits administration, payroll, onboarding. HR&P can help in any or all of those areas because there's no boxes with HR&P. You aren't ordering from a menu. It doesn't matter how small the job, doesn't matter how big the job, doesn't matter how medium the job. HR&P completely customizes a plan for what you and your business needs. You have a problem, you have an issue, you want to take a little bit off your plate, HR&P will find a way to help. They do it in a way that's unique. Technology meets service. Best technology you'll see, you'll love that, but you'll fall in love with their service. Guaranteed fulfillment. You won't be talking to a stranger on a call board, you'll be talking to someone who knows you. They know your business needs. Give them a call at 281-880-6525 and let HR&P customize a plan for you, 281-880-6525. Or check them out at hrp.net. That's hrp.net.
It's the Wheel of Bits on the Killer Bees.
Kibbles and bits, kibbles and bits. I'm going to get me some kibbles and bits.
Who knows the bits the bees will begrudgingly bite? Well, let's find out.
It's mostly.
Here's Joel and Jeremy. And Joe.
David brought us 3 wiffle balls and he bought us a bat. So...
You got blankers. He brought it.
Oh, I don't know, actually. It doesn't look like it's new. It's got a little bit of a...
These balls have tags on them.
And maybe he bought the balls, but yeah. I don't think he bought the
These bat. Are like pickleballs, too.
No, they're not. These are wiffle balls.
Those are pickleballs, too.
These are not pickleballs.
It's the exact same ball they use for pickleball.
I've never played pickleball. Do they use wiffle balls for pickleball?
I thought it was a little different. Wiffle ball, the official wiffle ball balls, only have those long kind of bent rectangular vents in them. The pickleballs have the circular air holes throughout the ball. Just telling you.
Well, I can't wait to smash whatever you're throwing up to me after 3 o'clock.
Okay.
Your career RA is about to take a hit.
Okay. Well, I mean, let's talk about your average possibly taking a move upward.
I hit 400 in high school.
Yeah, you had, what, 3 at-bats?
You can't hit 400 with 3 at-bats. It's 5.
Whatever.
2 for 5.
Sure, close
all
enough.
All right. Well, your math is
close
bad.
Close enough.
Bad math, but that's all right. What's our wheel of bits today, Joe? I was just working on my swing here a little bit.
Yeah.
I didn't hear what the voice guy said.
Is it Bush League? So we've got a couple things we can talk about.
But all right.
Bush League is a new favorite term of the Killer Bees over the last, like, 2 weeks. So we made a segment out of this one. All right, so we'll start with one that's been on the rundown for a while. Reclining your seat on an airplane. Is it fair game or is it Bush League?
And the what's is on. This is a long-standing point of contention for Fred and AJ from back in the day.
Really?
It is like sacrilegious to recline your seat in their minds.
What do you think?
I got no problem with it.
Oh, it's Bush League.
I don't mind doing it. When, especially if you look behind you and there's no one behind you, if the seat behind you is empty, then it's a no-brainer. But even still, like, especially like if I'm crowded, if I got the person in front of me basically in my laps reclining all the way back,
yeah.
I need a little bit more room. I'm going to be respectful and not go all the way back, but I got to create a little space myself.
It's selfish. It's selfish behavior. Anytime that you're acting selfish, it's Bush League because you're putting your comfort ahead of the comfort who is sitting behind you. So you're prioritizing your comfort over your fellow citizens' comfort. So yeah, absolutely. Anybody who reclines is putting themselves first. It is 100% Bush League.
You don't feel that way if someone's not behind you, right?
No, if somebody's behind. No, because now who are you Bush Leaguing?
That's
like if there's somebody, if there's no one behind you, yeah, it's free game.
I basically only do it in 2 circumstances. One, if there's no one behind me, and 2. If I got to get just a little space because I got someone that's reclining all the way back in front of me.
Mm. Yeah. So, but that's still putting you ahead of the person behind you. You're justifying it because the person in front of you is also selfish and a bit Bush League.
It's fine.
Yeah. So I think it's Bush League. 713-780-ESPN. Blankers says no. King of Twitches says I recline a little, not the way.
I think it is, but I think there's exceptions. I think it's Bush League to go all the way, to recline it all the way back, and there's no reason to do it.
Uh-huh.
I think that if there's no seat, no one's occupying the seat behind you, or
at that point, there's no Bush League.
If someone decides to completely go all the way back on you.
Okay. All right. What do you think, listener? 713-780-ESPN. Is it Bush League to recline on an airplane? 713-780-3776. AC, you think it's Bush League to recline on the airplane?
Just a little bit, yeah. I'm not a fan of it when someone does it to me, so I think – thereby, I shouldn't be a fan of it if I did it myself. So.
Yeah. I also like the recklessness when people do recline. Like, they go in a very aggressive way. Like, he's just all of a sudden pressed the button, dive back. It's like, I was working on my computer there, and now you've done some damage. That's something I also don't really approve of. Joe, where do you stand on reclining on an airplane? Bush League, not Bush League?
Well, I don't do it because I'm not tall enough to justify reclining my seat. I'm only 5 foot six, so like you got to know who you are. Yeah. I think it's
know your role. Shut your mouth.
Know your role. If you're under 5'8", you should not be allowed to legally recline your seat. I'll die on that hill.
Wow.
I don't think anybody should be legally. I think everybody should not be allowed to recline their seat if there's somebody behind them. That's the one area. But if there's nobody behind you, it's fine. It's cool. No issue at all. Obviously.
I don't mind.
Nobody behind you.
I don't mind if someone does it in front of me if they just ask. Like, if they check in, like, if they're like, hey, I need a little bit more room here. Can I recline back a little bit? And then if they check in to see if they've gone back too far, just be courteous and be respectful. Like, I'm cool with that. Like, if you want to be – you've never done it before?
I've never seen anybody check in. Like, because that is cool. Like, that is fine. Like, that is respectful. Because now you are worried about the person behind you's feelings. I like the check-in.
Yeah.
I've never seen the check-in actually played out. That's interesting.
I was thinking about that too, Joe, but I just – to me, yeah, in the case where there's someone that drops in your lap, it is the right move to look back and go, is it okay if I go back just a little bit because I'm trying to buy some space here?
Yeah. Have you seen the new airplanes?
Which one?
Like, it's not – well, they're not actually out yet, but it's like the beta. Like, they're testing these out, the new protocols. Like, they had a little convention, and they're testing out, like, different types of ways for seating. And it's like the person in front of you is, like, at your – basically, like, your waist, but it's elevated a little bit. So it creates, like, a foot of, like, window room that you can, like – like, you can extend your feet. So you're, like, sitting down, like, almost flat on your bottom. And you have your feet extended out underneath the other person's seat because it's elevated. But the look of it, it's like their high knees in your face.
Yeah.
It's like this far away. It's like a foot away from like basically their high knee in your face.
With how much extra thought people and how much time they have on their hands about trying to figure out like the dynamics and all of like the numbers that go with it for the angles and such, that there has to be a better way, right? Because people fight over the armrest too.
Yeah, which the armrest is an interesting conversation because I believe that if you're a middle seater, you get both armrests.
I'm okay with that because it's the most uncomfortable place to be in the row, and you can lean towards the window or you can – obviously, you have to be a little bit more creative and be in and out with your legs in the aisle when the flight attendants are coming back and forth.
Yep.
But, yeah, I would tend to agree with that. The middle seat should get both because you're kind of screwed both ways.
Middle seat should get both. The inside seat that's closer to the aisle gets the closest to the aisle, you know, handrest. And then the person that's near the window gets the window handrest. That's the way it should be. And there should also be, like, an invisible wall. Like, the handrest is the perimeter of your seat. You don't lean into somebody else's space. Figure out a way to not impede somebody else's window of space. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Damon, is this Bush League or not Bush League? You're in the Hive.
I say not Bush League because that's what they made them for, to recline. And as far as being selfish,
yep,
that selfish. Was me. I mean, I wouldn't want to be selfish for myself, you know, I have to look after my comfort as well. You know, I mean, I'm 6'5", so,
yeah.
I mean, I'd have to recline it all the way back.
That's the definition
that would be
selfish.
You're right. That's true. But, I mean, that's a time to be selfish. Sometimes it's a good selfish and a bad selfish.
You know, number one, got to worry about who number one is. I get you, Damon. So Damon's 6'5". That's kind of the height requirement there. Not 6'5", the height requirement, but it's like the height conversation too. Like, is there a weight here that if you're a certain height, now it becomes okay versus not? Here's the thing, though, with being tall. Reclining back does not extend your leg space. The leg space is still the same. Like, you can recline at a different angle, but the leg space is still the leg space. You're not creating more leg room. You're extending your back a little further.
Well, you can, and this is probably taking it too far, but in terms of where do you get your height from? Is it from the knee to the ankle? Is it more in your torso? Because if you've got longer shins, you can still slide them under the seat so that you can go all the way to the front part of the seat of the person in front of you to get a little more leg room. But you're absolutely screwed if you're getting more height in your torso because now you're just straight up and down in the seat. And even if you recline, I'm not sure it helps that much.
Yeah. Lone Star says, I'm 6'5", too. That's selfish, bro. Talking to Damon, that's interesting. Not Brad Kellner says, if Fred and AJ on a plane behind me, I'd definitely be reclining on them. I didn't know that that was a big hot button. So they both were not fans of it?
And it was a never-ending conversation. And they would shame the hell out of anybody that let them know that they reclined.
Yeah, I'm not a big recline guy. It's a very contentious conversation, though. You either are a recline guy or you're not a recline guy. But putting yourself first, you know, some people are willing to do it, some people aren't. Cody just walked to the Tecovas.
He did.
You think he bought himself some boots?
Doesn't look like he's carrying anything, so I'd say no.
You think Cody's a boots guy?
Yeah, for sure.
I think so. He went to Tech.
Yep.
I think it's a prerequisite. Like, I think you have to put that on your college application. I think it's the only admission there. Like, if you have boots, they allow you in. If you don't have boots, you can go somewhere else. I think that's what they tell you.
I definitely think that he is in that gunslinger lifestyle of wearing the cowboy boots.
Wreck him. Throw tortillas on a football field. 713-780-ESPN. You can weigh in on the is it Bush League to recline? Is it not Bush League? You can tell us. What is Christian Javier? What do you need to see from Christian Javier today? Astros go for the sweep. You know, didn't have his greatest outing against Cleveland. What does Christian Javier have to do for you to be pleased with where he's at? It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.
Suavemente, bésame, que quiero sentir.
The summer circuit rolls on from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, live from City Center Plaza. Here's the Killer Bees, Joe Blank and Jeremy Brenham.
Oh, you know what this means. You know who's on the mound. Andrew Carlson's doing a little jig. He's dancing. He loves this song. He likes a little suavemente. Listen to this. Christian Javier, 7-1 record, 313 ERA, on the mound against Mackenzie Gore, 3-5 record, 404 ERA. Astros go for the sweep of the first three-game series of this nine-game homestand. We wanted him to go 6-3. Are you adjusting it now that the Astros have won the first two against the Nats?
No.
I'm not either.
I think people are sleeping on Cincinnati right now.
They're looking playing some good ball.
Yeah, I mean, De La Cruz, I mean, with the attraction that everybody wants to see. But overall, they're playing good baseball. They're winning some games. They're competitive. And I don't think you should just all of a sudden look at that series and go, yeah, they're going to blow right through the Reds just like they're going to blow through the Nationals. Reds are going to – they're going to be fighting for every game against the Reds, I think.
Yeah, it's a team's playing better. It's weird. The NL Central's got the Reds and the Pirates that are playing some pretty good ball. Javier didn't have his best outing the last time that he was on the mound against the Guards. Kind of fell apart there in the middle. Got roughed up a bit. He had the big lead early. That was the Friday game, wasn't it? Yeah. And then the Astros lost in extras. You know, what do you see for Javier to turn it around a little bit? What has been a good year?
Yeah, no, look, I was disappointed that the outing the last time went the way it did. Do I worry about him and think that this is a turn for the worst with a trend that's going to continue? No, I don't, and especially because of the opponent, because he's at home. He's going to feel comfortable. I believe in his stuff. I was the guy, you know, at the start of the season saying he might be the ace, and he's got the ace-type staff. I believe in Christian Javier. I believe he's going to be just fine. I expect to see a totally different and more dominant outing than the last time he took the hill.
It helps he's going up against the Nats.
Yep.
The Nats' offense has been neutered a bit by the Astros these last two games. Hunter Brown had a really good outing on Monday, or on Tuesday, rather, and then Fromber had a really good outing yesterday on Wednesday. Doesn't he get the feel a little bit that this Astros season's kind of, like, cursed? Like, if you have a team that has been through as much as this Astros team has been on, like, through – you wouldn't be talking about postseason. You'd be eliminating the idea that you're still a champion. And, it, you know, yesterday, the announcement really didn't tell us anything we didn't know. It just kind of defined what it was. Lance McCullers not going to pitch. Michael Brantley, who you brought back in the offseason, has not played in a game. Jose Urquidy's out for a good chunk of time. Luis Garcia, one of your rotation arms, out for the entire year. Your big free agent acquisition, Jose Abreu, until June, it gave you absolutely nothing. It has, like, this is one of those, it's felt so far through June 15, like, this is one of those years that a lot of teams can't overcome. If you're without two-fifths of your rotation, if your big free agent bat can't produce, if your best offensive player, Yordan Alvarez, misses 4 to 6 weeks, Jose Altuve breaks his thumb, misses a good chunk of the first start of the season, most teams in baseball can't live through that. They can't sustain all of those injuries and be a playoff team. The fact that the Astros, with all of this stuff, with all of the injuries, with all of the lack of production, the fact that they're a playoff team at the season we're in today and they're 3.5 games back of the wild of the AL West lead, pretty miraculous, quite honestly.
If you're another team, sure. If you're the Astros, you've been through adversity before. You've overcome adversity. You've had the whole world wanting to come and crap on you. And the fact of the matter is that because you've been able to do what you've been able to do and because you've been through this kind of stuff, at least from an adversity standpoint, you've been through adversity in the past, this is why you love this golden era of Astros baseball and you want it to continue, because with all the injuries stacking up and all the things you've had to overcome, being in the position that you're in and knowing that no matter what you do or don't do at the trade deadline, you should be getting guys back that are going to help to make you even better, whereas other teams are hoping to make a deal to try and be on the level that you're already at. I think that's why there's been such a spoiled fan base to think that they shouldn't appreciate more what this team continues to do and what it's been able to do for the last 6-plus years.
That's why, for the Astros, it's kind of about like getting right second half of the year once September rolls around. Like, that's when you're trying to get right. That's when you're trying to get everybody healthy. You know, you want Yordan healthy. Maybe you make a move here or there. You want Jose Urquidy to be healthy. You want Jose Abreu to be in form. And then avoid other injuries throughout. Like, we're still talking about the Astros as a World Series contender. And they've been without some of their key cogs and will be without some of their key cogs for the entire year, yet somehow they're still a World Series contender. It speaks to two things. It speaks to how bad things have gone so far this year, and it also speaks to how good they are that we're still having this conversation with a team that's had to go through so much.
I'll add one to that, too. I think it speaks to ownership and upper management, too, to stay to a commitment of winning. A lot of teams, and we've seen it from different portions of when they're willing to pull the plug. If you're the Florida Marlins back in the day, you win one and then you absolutely just vacate the premises. You just unload everybody that you brought in. If you're other teams, you say, look, we had a great run. We were able to do a lot of things. But ownership says, you know, this is probably – we probably maybe exceeded expectations for how long this run would be. But you go, well, maybe we just start to regroup and it might take a few years. But not with Jim Crane, not with his dedication to winning, not with the people that are making the moves from Dusty on up. And
you
even
can argue their dedication to winning in the offseason were negative moves, though.
They're still spending enough dollars to say that they wanted to be that competitive. They wanted those moves to work out. They haven't. But they weren't afraid to spend money to try and stay competitive and relevant and competing for a title. So I think that a lot of owners would say, yeah, I'm not willing. We've had a great run. But I'm not going to – not only am I not going to sign JV, but I'm not going to take any of that money that I'm going to use, save from not signing JV, and reallocate it towards two or three other players. You want to give me some guys that are maybe trying to resurrect their career? We'll go take a shot at those kind of veterans, but I'm not going to go spend oodles of dollars on guys to try and continue to sustain this run. That's why I think that should be thrown in there.
Uncle Barney agrees with you about the reclining on a seat. Selfish to not want people to exercise their option to recline. If you call out people for their option, you are the selfish one. Uncle Barney's coming hot.
That a baby, Uncle
at
Barney.
Nephew Branham. Man. I'm
more
have to
tickets
re-evaluate
for you,
some
Barney.
Things.
More tickets for you.
Astros lineup is out. Got a new leadoff. You want to guess the leadoff man for the Astros blankers?
Jose Altuve.
Nope.
Really?
Nope.
And it's not going to be Mauricio Dubon?
Nope.
Tell me.
Chaz McCormick.
What?
Back into the leadoff spot. The Chaz Chomp leads it off for the Astros.
Didn't he change it? Now isn't it like the suave
he did
salsa
well,
move?
The Chaz Chomp's from the fans, but he did do a salsa the home run the other day.
They said someone needed to do a gift because they were adding that to his repertoire besides the Chomp.
Yeah. Chaz McCormick back in the leadoff spot. How about that? He can't play over Corey Jolks and Jake Myers, but he leads it off for the Houston Astros. Now, Mackenzie Gore is a lefty, and we know that Chaz McCormick hits lefties better than he hits righties. Although he did homer off a righty the other day.
He feasts off lefties.
Yeah, so here's the full lineup. Chaz leads it off in left. Altuve at second, bat second. Bregman at third, hits third. The middle three, Tucker in right, Abreu at first. Pena's back into the lineup at short. And the bottom three, Jolks DHs, Myers in center, Maldonado catches.
So Yiner with a day off.
Yiner is not playing. He's
after
got the
a bomb
off.
Yesterday.
Yeah. Well, Chaz said,
what Dusty does.
Chaz said yesterday after hitting a bomb on Tuesday, you dong, you get the day off, you've earned it.
Man.
Maybe it's the reverse genius. He's reverse engineering it. Because, look, people like days off. I enjoy my days off. Do you like your days off?
Sure.
He's rewarding stellar play with a day off.
I hate it.
I think it's genius by Dusty Baker.
Now
you
do.
I trust
now,
Dusty.
Yeah, in this new Dusty I Trusty mode for you
I trust
this year.
Us. How about that, man? Like, you get a home run, you get a day off.
Sucks when you're looking for power.
Unless you're Abreu. You play every day because you're a workhorse. And you're
and
a
you
star
better make sure you're earning every penny by at least sweating and getting it out, getting out there instead of sitting down.
Yeah. So that's the lineup for the Astros against Mackenzie Gore. New leadoff man in McCormick, Altuve, Bregman, Tucker, Abreu, Pena, Jolks, Myers, Maldonado. Do you think – I had a thought here. Here's my tinfoil hat. Y'all tell me if it's a conspiracy or if it's reality. Dana Brown yesterday on the flagship said that Jeremy Pena would be back in the lineup. Dusty Baker did not put Jeremy Pena in the lineup yesterday, said he needed another day off. Was that Dusty Baker power tripping Dana Brown a little bit?
Nah, I don't think so at all.
Dana
I think
said he was going to be in the lineup.
But I think that, as we all know, when you're dealing with a guy, if you believe at face value what you're told and he's sick, that as much as you think, no, I'm making progress, I'm going to feel better tomorrow and I'm going to be ready to go, and then you just don't quite feel 100% right, that you basically say, look, we're playing the Nationals. There's no need to rush you back if you don't feel great. Give it one more day. Hopefully tomorrow you're 100, closer to 100%. We'll put you out there.
Bronco says Dusty's punishing Abreu by making him play every day. It's true. You hit a home run, you get a day off, unless you're Jose Abreu. Chaz hits a home run Tuesday, day off Wednesday. Yiner hits a home run yesterday, day off Thursday. You hit a home run as a Houston Astro, you earned yourself a day off. It's Dusty's way, and in Dusty we trusty.
Dusty's still he's a Yuli guy, and he's still pissed off they signed him in the first place, so he's got to earn every penny.
It's a workhorse. A couple people weighing in on what's wrong with Dusty's lineup. Where do I start? Chaz is not a leadoff person. And stop DHing Jolks over Diaz. He loves himself some Jolks.
He does.
Because you can make the case that Jolks is not quite in the same tier as Chaz and Jake and maybe shouldn't have a rotation. And then if you're looking at just offense, you're taking Yiner, you're taking Jolks.
I just offensively I'm taking Yiner the way he's been balling lately. I mean – he hit the bomb was like a very elevated pitch last night, too, that he just hammered to the tracks. So I would be sitting him down right now.
Broncos, why not Pena at two? Ocho, no Dubon means I'll be watching Law and Order.
Jeez.
Uncle Barney says Dusty is nuts.
That would be you last year.
I was never that way.
I've always
been a big fan of Dusty.
Oh,
over 2,000 wins, top 10 managerial
stop
wins.
Stop it right now.
He won a World Series. Like, what? How do you not have faith in Dusty Baker?
That's what got you, and you even said as much. If we went back and rolled the tape, you're like, look, if they win another World Series, if this works and he wins another World Series, then I'll turn over a new leaf. So there you go.
Why do we care so much about the one when Dusty's managing for the 162? That's what he's doing. He's giving Yiner a little bit of rest.
As I said then, and I will say now, I will be more forgiving if it turns into another title and he doesn't do these quirky things in the playoffs, which he didn't do a year ago. I have no reason to believe he'll do it now. So there you go.
Yeah, I haven't. All right, what do you think the wheelhouse is leading off with? They're all here.
BK early today. Prompt.
Yeah, Cody was the first one here. Jake was second. BK's third. What do you think they're leading off their show with today?
Astros, big win last night.
Yeah, you take this very seriously.
I
Joe,
do.
What do
I
you
take
think?
Everything very
what
seriously.
Do you think the wheelhouse is leading off their show with today?
How hot it is.
Oh, it's a good call, Joe.
I'll go with how Noah Brown's downfield blocking is going to lead the Texans to an above 500 record in 2023. I think that's what they're going to
they
lead
might
off
play
today's
who's
show
your favorite
with.
Salesperson.
You think?
Yeah, it's possible.
It won't be Q today.
That's what I'm
all right, does it for us. Thanks to Q for setting this all up at the beautiful City Center Plaza on a 108 heat index day. But nobody's soft here with the Killer Bees. Thanks to Andrew Carlson for looking great and on-site engineering while doing it. Joe George for doing all the hard work. He's Blank. I'm Brandon. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.